on the one hand, regulators need to sort of look at their approach to M&A. Well, they totally fucked up there, didn't they? Because why did they allow Nokia and Alcatel-Lucent to merge? Could none of them see there was a possibility in the future that there'd be a backlash against the Chinese and that you'd have a two-player market?
We're going to have an echo of this in the third segment as well. Hello, and hold on a sec. Get the hands ready, Ian. There's a little wipe for you there, mate. Cheers. Clean yourself up. And after that, if you could put on some gloves, that'd be good. Yeah. And if you can sit a bit further away, can you sit a bit further away, please, mate? I can feel the coronavirus coming off of you from here. And and masks, of course. Oh, right, Christ. Okay. Hello, and nah, of course not. Not going to do that. All right, mate. Good to be back. Cheers. Cheers.
Wait. Hold on. Let me. Yeah.
Come on, Pierre. Catch up. Ooh. Yeah. Is it?
It's still in.
Is it overflowing a bit? Yeah. So, yeah. Here we are. Finally
that
back
is
in the office.
Horrible. That. I don't know what's on it. It's like coated in mucus.
Yeah. It's very slimy.
Yeah.
I know, they've got those all over the office. So we're back in the office because it's the first week. So 12th of April, for our international listeners, of which we seem to have some, 1st of April was like another little milestone in when we're allowed to leave the house again.
Yeah.
And so we thought, let's come to the office. So I'll start the podcast properly now, having done my little bit of theatrics. Pierre, thank you for indulging me. Hey, so welcome to the first telecoms.com podcast from a studio this year.
Oh my God.
First for like 4 months.
Bloody hell.
For like 25 episodes or something like that. So good to see you again, guys. Yeah. Nice to know you exist in the flesh.
Now that we're in
not...
the studio again, doesn't feel that long since we were here, oddly enough.
No. But, that's because we've done so little with our lives in the intervening time.
Yeah.
It's good to be back, and we've got some beers, and we're going to go out after. And I've been enjoying seeing some footage of people going out in Soho and all that. Do you know, it feels different from the last time lockdown lifted, which was like June of last year, June, July.
Summer, yeah.
And I went out in Hitchin, and no one was out. I thought it would be carnage. That's half the reason I wanted to go. I wanted to see all the young people just falling about the
place.
It wasn't
open, was it? You could actually go inside the pubs
and you
as
could
well
go inside.
Time,
yeah,
whereas
yeah,
now you can only actually go into beer gardens.
Also, last time it was much warmer, yeah.
I know, and yet
it's
no
freezing.
One went out.
But nobody came out. So it's freezing time, now, and you can only sit in the beer garden, and yet it's busy.
So I think culturally what's changed is that time people were still quite spooked.
Yeah.
And now they've had a year and they thought, hold on a sec. You know, and I know, I'm not belittling the people who've been ill and who've died.
There is a vaccine as well.
Yeah, there is a vaccine, but I bet you half the people are out haven't had one. I mean, all the people under 50, isn't it?
Well, that's true.
I only just was able to sign up. I'm 49. I was only just able to sign up for later on this month. So, I hope I don't turn into a zombie. That's not very responsible, is it? Social media.
You will get much better 5G reception.
You'll be all right.
Yeah. I'll be all right. Well, Mrs. has already had her first one, so at least if I get it, I won't give it to her.
Yeah.
Cool. So, hurrah. It's good to be back, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
But we do have a podcast to do. We can't just have an hour filming us getting pissed.
No.
So, what are we going to chat about this week? There has been a fair bit going on this week. A lot of it all sort of regulatory, governmental, legal, that sort of thing, or strategic. So, we're going to start by talking. There was, I think, a leak to the FT, but it's a fairly official, verifiable leak. It wasn't like people close to the situation reckon type of stuff. About this sort of task force we've got headed up by Ian Livingstone, who wrote those books that you had in the 80s where you got to choose. No, that wasn't. That's a different Ian Livingstone. Who was...
Do not get that reference?
No. Well, you're A, too young, and B, too French to get that reference. Yeah, there were these fighting fantasy books. Me and my mate Gaz is going to be out later. That's how we first met. And they'd be just textbooks, but at the end of, let's say, a page, it'd go, do you want to fight the orc? Go to number three. Or if you want to leg it, go to number six.
Right.
And they were written by two guys called Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone. So that was my obscure joke. But no, this Ian Livingstone used to be the head of BT or something.
Yeah.
And now he's chairing this task force that the government's got that says, like, what are we going to do about
it's the telecoms? UK Telecom Diversity Task Force, which sounds like it's an effort to get more people from Asia.
I know,
and,
for once, diversity
African
doesn't mean...
communities into...
Yeah, for once, diversity doesn't mean that. Although, give it time.
Yeah.
So we're going to start by chatting about that. Then we're going to talk about Huawei yet again. It just keeps announcing... Sort of, if it's not sort of annual numbers, it's sort of cunning new plans, and it was the latter this week. And they were sort of, in their Huawei way, indirectly addressing the shit they found themselves in, thanks mainly to the US government.
Yeah.
And, yeah, quite reasonably, they didn't actually moan about it that much. They were just like, all right, here we are. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Was more or less what they said. So that'll be our second one. Our last one we're going to talk about, the merger between Virgin Media and O2 in the UK has been pretty much approved, bar one more month of presumably moaning from BT or whatever.
I don't know if the are there other people moaning about it that much? Because consolidation can work in their favour anyway.
I don't know. I just know that there's still a window for stakeholders to say it. It's just my shitty way of characterising all feedback as moaning.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that and might talk about sort of M&A in general, tech regulation in general, that sort of thing. So, oh yes, and just to remind you that if you're watching this on the site, you can also listen to it on... Oh, I've forgotten where you can listen to it for a sec. You can also watch it on Facebook and on YouTube.
Pretty much anywhere.
And you can listen to it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify and loads of other things. I don't know if you can catch it. I've got my my special.
There had to be no other t-shirt worn today.
That's the only
I think.
One you can wear today. So there we go. Good for me.
Yeah. Good for you getting out of the house and doing things.
49 going on 15. So I'm going to start actually because when we were having our fairly perfunctory. So what are we going to chat about? Pre-chat. You flagged up this thing that was in the FT. And you've remembered what the name of this task force is, and I haven't. Mm. And you know that it's chaired by a guy who didn't used to write children's fantasy books. So I think you're the better qualified to kick this one off.
This has been coming for a while. The UK Telecom Diversity Task Force, I think is the full name of it, was set up last year by Oliver Dowden, who's a government minister for tech, basically, although his proper job title covers things like sports and media. It's such a weird department.
Yeah, DCMS, isn't it?
Bloody weird.
Yeah.
What the hell sport and stuff has got to do with telecom vendors, I don't know. But anyway, he set this up shortly after, I think, they'd taken the decision to ban Huawei and ZTE from the country's 5G market on the grounds that they're just kind of too risky. And the worry was that if you do that, you're only going to really be left with two alternatives.
A fairly realistic worry is that's the fact on the ground.
Yeah. So they've basically reduced diversity by banning Chinese companies, and now they're worried about it. And the response has been, well, we need to
increase.
We need to do something.
It's a classic
about
government thing.
Yeah.
The classic sort of government stroke regulatory game of whack-a-mole.
It is a whack-a-mole. Yeah.
Where they go, right, let's deal with that. Oh, no, that's created a new problem. Right, let's deal with that. Oh, that's great. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And then they'll probably sort of have some national champion that does really well, and then they'll have to throw some money at Nokia and Ericsson for skanking them out of market share. So anyway,
But the task force got, it's 12 members maybe. I mean, it's got some big names on it. Ian Livingston used to be head of BT. I believe Scott Petty's on it, who's the CTO of Vodafone UK.
Roz Singleton,
she's on it. Yep. He used to be head of UK Broadband, which was bought by Three. So it's got... It's got some sort of
heavyweights,
and I think there's people from the NCSC involved in it as well. People like Ian Levy, who's sort of technical director of the NCSC. So it's quite it's got people who seem to know what they're doing. I thought it was quite worrying actually the report that came out in the FT this week, which suggested that the FT wrote a sort of 300 or 400 word story. Obviously, not much nuance there. You can't cover all aspects of this report, which I suspect could be 80, 90 pages, who knows?
Were they leaked the whole thing, or do you think they were just leaked excerpts?
Then maybe they were just leaked excerpts. I mean, they didn't make that clear. But the thing they seized hold of was this apparent recommendation that operators should... there's all these dealing in percentages these days. You can't have more than 30% of Huawei in your network by 2022 and all this lot. And it seems like this has continued, but in the other direction.
It's so arbitrary.
So now instead of saying you can't have more than this percentage of this company in your network, they're saying you should have 25% new vendors in your network by the mid-2020s. New vendors meaning not Ericsson or Nokia, because obviously that's what they're trying to get away from.
And obviously not Chinese.
And, you know, the idea being that, you know, if we don't act, I'm guessing this is what they're thinking, if we don't act and have this kind of quota in there, then we've just got this this two-player market, which is not a great situation to be in. But to me, it's a very worrying sign of sort of government intervention, really, in an area that I think the government should stay out of. I mean, I think the move to ban Huawei and ZTE can be sort of justified on the basis that, you know, it's not a good idea to have your critical infrastructure being built by companies that are answerable to Xi Jinping. And also, you could
It's not like with every passing day you think, let's give Xi Jinping a break.
It isn't, exactly. And there were, you know... And
he's just locked up Hong Kong's biggest media owner.
I saw that today,
yes. Just taking the piss.
Yep. And there were trade arguments as well, you know, for doing what they did. But I think taking it to the level where we're saying you have to have companies that aren't Ericsson and Nokia in your network is, you know, it's the government basically interfering in an operator's commercial arrangements with its suppliers. It's the sort of thing that was going on in the early 1970s when you had like the Harold Wilson government interfering in the car sector and trying to engineer mergers with British Leyland, and it all went horribly wrong.
3-day week, rubbish piling up in the streets.
Exactly. It's not quite going as far as that in actually picking an industrial champion and saying we want to sort of support this company. But it is, there are elements of that, because I think where a lot of this comes from is this kind of hope that, you know, if they have policies like this, it would give rise to local homegrown players, perhaps. You know, there's this hope that Open RAN, this new technology, which is really the only thing that operators can introduce if they're not going to use Ericsson and Nokia.
Yeah, it's the great hope.
It's the great hope. And there seems to be this hope that you know, if you push that, then it will give rise to local alternatives, you know, and that maybe we'll get sort of British players like, you know, have a bit like the days of Plessy and Marconi and these, you know, British companies that used to have a play in the network sector but ended up getting bought and sold off and merged and everything. But I just think it's a really dangerous move, to be honest with you. I mean, it's curious why they're so worried about this particular consolidation as well. I mean, there's all sorts of instances of consolidation and oligopolies and you know, market imbalances that go on throughout the global economy these days, and that they've seized on this, you know, why this is a bigger worry than the fact that there's only one company in the world that can make the most advanced chips at the moment, or that we have the public cloud outside China that's dominated by three players and nobody seems to be ringing alarm bells about that, and why the government is taking it on itself to have this particular, you know, approach to telecom. I find it a bit weird, and I think it'll just backfire, because there's no signs really of any UK companies at the moment that you could support that are going to be able to rival Ericsson and Nokia.
Yeah, I mean, but they're not specifying UK companies.
No, they're not. So what are they going to do?
Samsung.
So what's the net effect of this going to be? Is going to be to weaken the power of two European suppliers
in favour of Asian or
US companies.
Or US,
And they're doing it at a time when, you know, a lot of the operators don't. So this is the other odd thing, this mid-2020s suggestion to me.
It's pretty close.
The mid-2020s, all these companies have now made decisions, apart from Vodafone, they've all made decisions on their 5G strategy. Yeah. And they've all picked Ericsson and Nokia.
Funnily enough.
Which, and let's
just like the government told them
to. Just like the government told them to. Now, let's remember that this is extremely capital-intensive industry where you spend a lot of money and you then tie yourself into a relationship for a number of years and you depreciate that equipment. They've just been told they've got to strip out a load of Huawei equipment. And now the government's coming along and potentially saying, oh, hang on, you need to have a quarter of your network that's not Ericsson and Huawei, and you might need to replace some of their stuff by the mid-2020s to have... Now, none of this has been published yet, so we don't quite know.
But it seems to be going down that... fully legit when the FT covered it.
Yeah, and I just find it...
And the FT's one of the better when it comes to not just pulling anonymous sources out of its arse.
It's interesting because I watched a Telecom TV webinar, or a little bit of one. You know, our old colleague Ray, who went over to Telecom TV, they did an interesting webinar on open architectures and supplier diversity. And I got directed by somebody to...
So did I, by the same person.
To a bit of Neil McRae talking about this. Neil McRae's the chief architect of BT. And what he said was really interesting, because he basically came on, he got asked a question, you know, the question was basically what he thinks about supply diversity. And he kind of came on and went, we've gone to fewer suppliers, yeah. Actually. We've saved money
by going to... Supply diversity is a pain in the arse, he basically
supply
said,
diversity is awful. We used to have 45 vendors in one bit of the network. We've gone down to 4. And he says, all this open stuff where people are suggesting that there's even 5 companies makes me want to run for the hills, I think he's how he put it. They want fewer suppliers because they can get the economies they need, they can save money. And now the government's coming along and saying, hang on, it's not okay for you to have 2 companies in your network, which is what BT will have in the RAN. You need to have a bunch of these open RAN guys as well.
So there's an open RAN tangent on that, which I'm going to come to, because when I covered an open RAN story this week, I linked to your story because I thought you asked a really good question that cuts to the chase. But my coverage of this FT thing, it's very consistent. People are going to think that we like spend all day chatting to each other, but we don't. Days can go by.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the time during the week, apart from we chat, apart from to just moan about the lockdown or something.
It's not about work.
It's usually moaning about the lockdown.
The only time it's to do with work is normally me just, I'm not sure what to think about something perhaps a bit more technical. And I go, Ian, I sort of sanity check. I go, Ian, is this more or less barking up the right tree? You know, as long as you don't go, Scott, have you been drinking? And then I think, all right, I'm going to go with that angle. But that's about the only time we chat. Anyway, but we do often agree, which is quite handy. And let me read you the last 2 paragraphs of my coverage of that thing. I said, it's hard to know how seriously to take government-commissioned reports such as this, which is expected to be published later this week. Presumably, and I don't think it has, actually. So that was written.
It's not been published yet. No, I've been looking for it every morning.
Said, yeah, that they thought it'd be out.
And I didn't see it today. Maybe I've missed it. Maybe it's just come out now while we're talking. But yeah.
Okay, well, they're leaving it late. But then sometimes they do with these things. Anyway, presumably the people compiling it have some sense of the desired outcome and are keen to be considered for future report compiling work. This is my cynicism coming in here. The fact that it was produced by an organisation that has a specific aspiration baked into its name just adds to our scepticism. I also refer to myself in the third person because I'm turning into a megalomaniac. I think I'm the queen. But that's why I have my headline, Vendor Diversity Task Force Calls for More Vendor Diversity. It's kind of baked in. And then my last paragraph, I said, ultimately, this should be a matter for the market. If smaller vendors come up with competitive kit, then UK MNOs will consider using it. If they don't, then imposing substandard products on the UK's telcos merely to hit some arbitrary threshold would be foolish and self-defeating.
Spot on, exactly. Yeah. And if you're a company boss at the moment, or the CTO or something, Howard Watson, who said similar things to Neil McRae a few months ago, actually, to a parliamentary inquiry, almost like he was trying to warn off doing this kind of stuff. And then you've got someone coming along saying, oh, we're telling you, you can't choose these companies, you need to choose these ones, even though they're still shit by 2025.
Yeah.
Your shareholders are going to be.
It's like they don't understand how the free market works. I know telecoms is heavily regulated.
Not to this
but it's
extent,
only
though.
Heavily regulated. Well, prior to all this Huawei stuff, it was only regulated when it came to things like pricing.
Yeah.
Ofcom's job.
I think there's a worrying.
The politicisation of telecoms that we've been talking about.
It actually goes beyond telecom with this particular government, and we're going to get into territory that we always end up straying into, which isn't, strictly speaking, telecom when we start whinging about coronavirus.
So you love it, don't you?
There's a move, I think, towards things that previous conservative administrations would have looked at and gone, that's a nightmare scenario. Yeah. The attitude to civil liberties, for instance, the whole approach the state takes towards things like this, towards industrial policy. A lot of this stuff that we're seeing at the moment is the kind of stuff you'd have associated with Harold Wilson, as I say, in the early 1970s.
A proper socialist.
You wouldn't expect it to be coming from a Boris Johnson-led conservative government.
Yeah, if it had been Corbyn doing it, you'd have gone, what do you expect?
This is the kind of stuff you would expect under a Jeremy Corbyn. I suspect it'd be even more extreme,
slash John
actually.
McDonnell.
But this... telling companies which suppliers to use. I mean, it's one thing, the China argument I can buy on the grounds that, if there's a security risk there and there's also ethical considerations even, we wouldn't have bought, we wouldn't have bought military stuff off the Germans in 1937, I'm guessing. So, you could sort of...
Yeah, and we wouldn't be selling guns to Saudi Arabia. I mean, that's a complete quagmire, isn't it?
It is a quagmire, but
yes,
but it doesn't mean it's wrong. It doesn't mean it's...
The US is.
But, yeah, well,
but,
as
but,
are we.
But you know, no one's scared about Saudi Arabia, you know, whereas China's,
yeah, exactly.
China's
but
slightly
the ethics,
different. You know,
the ethics of what they get up to. You know, what's his name? Chopping up journalists and shit.
Yeah, but it's not just the ethics,
is it?
If the Chinese
have, don't chop up any more
if there is a security
please.
Risk and the Chinese has got, you know, a route into crippling
yes.
infrastructure, then
which we're still not sure about, know, are we? After all these years of
no.
banging on about it, we're still not sure.
No.
That a bit
but,
of Huawei
but the point
kit,
is, you know, if the future geopolitics, if there yeah. are a clash between China and the West, we don't want to be enriching the Chinese anyway, do we? And giving them
yeah.
control of our technology sector, I think, is probably the kind of the thoughts of the people who.
Understood.
Who've warned about Huawei. Now, I can sort of buy into some of that stuff, but I think taking it a step beyond that and saying, right, well, now we've got this situation and we need to worry about what kind of companies come in and you need to use that and you need to use this, which is very much a commercial thing.
Mm.
It's very, like you say, it's very much something for the market. If there's a problem in a market where there's too few suppliers or too... Now, on the one hand, regulators need to sort of look at their approach to M&A. Well, they totally fucked up there, didn't they? Because why did they allow Nokia and Alcatel-Lucent to merge? If you could none of them see there was a possibility in the future that there'd be a backlash against the Chinese
yeah.
and that you'd have a two-player market?
We're going to have an echo of this,
you know,
in the third segment as well.
And yet they didn't. So they kind of screwed up there. And you know, and it's kind of up to the market to resolve, really, I think, at the moment. You know, the operators themselves want, they themselves say, a lot of them, they want to have more competition in the market. And there are initiatives underway to bring that about. It's not up to the government to say you need to go out and buy a quarter
no,
of equipment from someone.
It's just silly. And then, I mean, you know, not only do you get this this precedent set, as you were talking, of governments telling private organisations what they can do. You know, and I know we have laws and all that sort of thing, but they're constantly sort of expanding the remit of those laws.
Yeah.
You're going to get all kinds of laws of unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Like...
I think I even used that expression in my
I'm sure.
write-up.
Well, it's because you're a good fucking writer, mate. you know, you could have little companies suddenly spring up where, lo and behold, they're actually funded by Ericsson or Nokia, and they've
yes.
just...
Yep.
Or you could have... Or you get the thing I talked about where you get substandard kit coming in. I see.
You'll also, I mean, one of the unintended consequences is that you know, as I say, you force these companies into swap outs not that long after they've already had one. You end up, not really doing anything for UK industry because the alternatives just aren't there.
Right.
Because that in itself, this policy in itself is not going to produce UK alternatives to Ericsson and Nokia, is it? All it will do is potentially
make a BT
or... I don't
think this
is a
protectionist thing at all. I mean, I was just going to lead up to this, actually. Who is this for? Who is this policy for? Because if it's the operators moaning about how now they've got a duopoly and so Nokia and Ericsson are in a much stronger position to dictate price and perhaps not accusing them of anything but behave in a pseudo-cartel-like way.
Yeah.
In other words, Ericsson raises his prices on a... bit of RAN kit, and Nokia goes, well, we might as well fucking raise our price as well. Whereas if there's 3, 4, 5 ones, the ability for sort of spontaneous, uncoordinated cartel-like behaviour is much smaller. That's why duopolies are still dangerous because, you know, if you and I had the total market for Star Opperman in the UK... and we were supposedly in competition with each other. I was doing them for a fiver a bottle. I put them up to 6. You've got a choice of, do I stay at 5 and hopefully take some business from Scott, or do I put it up to 6 and we're both coining it?
Yeah.
And we don't need to conspire. We don't need to get together in a room and rub our hands together. So you would think one of the main purposes of this is to protect the operators, but then it's self-defeating because then they're imposing... You know, if the operators want vendor diversity, then they'll vote with their wallets, won't they?
Yeah.
And they'll go, well, no, I'm gonna buy into this thing. So here's the other thing I wanted to talk about before I forget about it. Another story this week was the Xilinx Mavenir thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so Xilinx, which makes hardware, especially semiconductors, and Mavenir, which makes sort of cloud software with for telecoms. I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but that's all I can remember to how to pigeonhole them. got together to make this sort of package of a 5G radio that's sort of Open RAN compliant.
Yeah.
That you can just sort of plug into a broader Open RAN setup. And you asked the question, so you actually bothered to interview them. I didn't. I keep getting cussed, by the way, on my forums for being lazy. I wrote one story, and I think the commenter slightly misunderstood why I wrote it. And I went, "Oh, they're doing this, this, or something." And what I meant was to be flippant, is like, or whatever. But he thought I was just expressing a sort of indifference and a disinclination to actually research the thing properly, which I'm also guilty of. But that wasn't particularly what I meant there.
Yeah.
And I didn't bother. Just to prove that I'm also guilty of it, I didn't bother to actually interview the people, and you did. So when I wrote it up, I linked to you. And you asked a question saying, if this is so open, well, to paraphrase you, and I'll let you correct me if I've got it wrong. If this is, you know, if this is Open RAN, why is it bundled?
Yeah.
You know, the whole point of Open RAN is each vendor is completely autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
And then the operator picks and chooses. And because they've all got the right software, they all fit together like Lego or whatever.
Exactly.
So why are you bundling it?
Yeah.
You know, and then I think it was that lad who I've interviewed from Mavenir. What's his name?
John Baker.
Yeah, John Baker. He was going, well, yeah, totally. You can swap out Mavenir anytime. So why fucking have it in the first place? If you can swap it out, that's what I don't get. And
yeah.
So that sort of feeds into the thing we were saying before. If it works, then you're going to do it spontaneously. You don't need to have it forced on you, either by bundling or by government fiat.
Well, this is why I think the whole Open RAN thing is, you know, it's very curious as to where it's going to end up, really. You know, do we end up with a market where you really do have operators just going out and buying components willy-nilly and slotting them alongside other components and it all works brilliantly? Probably not. You know, I mean, what Mavenir and Xilinx are doing is they're just trying to produce a kind of
something
carbon copy of what Ericsson and Nokia do, aren't they, really? They're trying to replicate that, you know, model, because they know that a lot of operators don't want to actually, you know, all this talk about, oh, they all want to go out and they want to have the freedom to buy, you know, their software separately from their hardware. Or actually, a lot of them don't. They want more competition in terms of options available, but they still want integrated deals, I think. And this is an integrated deal, isn't it? You've got Mavenir integrated itself with Xilinx, and it's all very well for them to say...
A bit like a bunch of Ericsson kit all bundled together.
Exactly, it's the same thing. It's two different companies, but it's still, you're going to one company to get it. You know, you're going to one shop to buy this mm-hmm. stuff. And then, you know, the question is... I think the question I asked them was, well, can someone take out Mavenir software after they've done this and put AltiaStar or Parallel Wireless in instead? And they're like, well, yeah, if it's compliant with the specifications, then yeah, that's the idea. But until someone tries to do that, you know, we don't know, do we? You know, anybody can say that until an operator has actually gone and done it. We don't know how easy that is. But the point is, it's an integrated deal, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It might be O-RAN compliant.
It's a starting point. I mean, I think it's exciting. I think Xilinx is exciting because it's being bought by AMD. Now, AMD, I used to cover AMD back in the day before I was into telecoms at all, and it was more just general IT, but especially semiconductors. But it was more, the reason I covered AMD is because I was covering semiconductors for PCs.
Yeah.
And they were the only competitor to Intel on the CPU side, and they were the only competitor to NVIDIA after they bought ATI on the GPU side. And they're a bit shit at both at the time I was covering them. They're a bit like, I don't know, Nokia buying Alcatel-Lucent, in that the process of that M&A sort of diminished them for quite a long time. But now they're on the up. If you look at their share price, it's going exponential.
Yeah.
And they're kicking ass, and they're in the right place at the right time.
Well, Xilinx would have been a good move. I mean, they're very successful. And,
they're
doing
buying
well
them.
At the moment. Yeah.
And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
So the fact that Xilinx has got a lot of interest in telecoms at the time of Open RAN, and it's being bought by AMD, which is doing really well, and so it's got, you know, it's got some capital, I think it's quite exciting for this diversity. But just let it happen.
Yeah.
If they're good, it will happen.
Exactly.
And as for Mavenir, you know, I'm just totally above my pay grade to make any qualitative comment about the quality of their stuff, but they've been around for ages, presumably for a reason.
Yeah.
And they seem to be positioned in the right way.
Not doing a lot of Open RAN stuff, though, it should be said. I mean, that's still very nascent. Most of their revenues come from other areas. So
it was associated with, like, NFV and that sort of thing, was it?
Yeah, they're in core as well. You know, right. they have a lot of other activities. Most of the money at the moment is not coming from Open RAN. I mean, that's possibly the biggest opportunity for them because the RAN market's bigger than.
But they're positioned. They're one of the companies that's in the right.
Yeah, they're
place.
Hoping. They're one of the companies in the right place and hoping to do well out of this. I mean, it's really, really hard to say how Open RAN is going to pan out. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very hard to predict.
Game.
And this is probably why...
Get Andrew Lincoln in to tell us. Game.
Yeah. But, I think even Gabe would say there's still a lot of uncertainties. I mean, analysts can make... You know, he's got a more qualified opinion.
Especially if he's on the pod.
Should I call him and put him on the spot? He's free now.
He's obviously going to have a more qualified view than I have because
Gabe would not like being suddenly called up.
He's in
live
the thick
on
of all
the
this, but it's just really hard to say. I think because there's, you know, you hear such contrasting things from the companies, from the operators themselves. You know, you'll hear one message that the operators want lots of diversity and they want the freedom to mix and match. And then you've got people like Howard Watson, who's no small person in the telecom industry. He's a CTO of BT, for God's sake, saying we want fewer suppliers. I mean, his view is what they really want.
Was it McRae or was it Watson?
Watson said the same
McRae.
Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Watson said the same thing a few months ago to a parliamentary inquiry about all this. I think probably hoping to head off some of this stuff, actually, about using more companies in your network.
Yeah.
And the thing, what I think he wants, right, and this is probably what a lot of operators want, is they want a market where there's more than three options. Yeah, they don't want
just
these
three.
But
they're still only going to pick a couple of
them. You know, they're not going to go out and do this thing that Rakuten seems to have done, where you get loads of different people involved in the party and it's all very complicated and you have to integrate it all and, you know, and okay, if you're greenfield and you're doing it from scratch, it's probably you can get the automation in place to make it a bit easier. But for a brownfield player with some legacy stuff as well and... You know, and it's got a lot of customers to support on old platforms. You don't want that. You know, Neil McRae said this, complexity is the worst thing for operators. They want one or two suppliers. And so this is why the Mavin Xilinx thing is interesting, because they can just pitch that as this is your all-in-one kind of RAN deal. You know, and I think even part of that deal was actually Mavin doing the core as well. You know, so you take your core and your radio from this Xilinx
Mavin. And I think we said this on either the last pod or the one before. We said, you know, is it still Open RAN if, you know, if A, B, C, and D suppliers are the best for each component and you buy them as a bundle?
Yeah.
Well, how different is that to buying the lot from Nokia or Ericsson?
Yeah, it's not. And maybe the only thing about Open RAN is that it's made it, you know, this is why these standards are curious, actually, because any company can open its interfaces to any other company. You know, Xilinx and Mavenir can get together and say, look, we'll make sure that our stuff works. You know, they're saying they've done it based on the O-RAN alliance.
Yeah, there's open and there's open, isn't there?
But, you know, Nokia could go and work, and has done, in fact. They go and work with other companies. I think Ericsson has had arrangements, I think, with Fujitsu in the past, you know, for radio stuff. And, you know, so they can open their interfaces to other companies and make sure that there's no problems. But it doesn't mean it's based on open specifications. An open specification to me is something where you take your Xilinx radio, the example I was giving, let's say you buy this product that Xilinx and Mavenir are offering, and then in a year's time you go, well, I don't really like Mavenir anymore. Yeah. I actually prefer AltioStar software for some reason. And maybe, this is the other thing that's complicated, actually. How does it work commercially, this sort of thing, you know, pricing-wise? But let's say you did want to come along and get rid of the Mavenir and introduce another software player. Can you just do it like that, you know, and plug in that software and it works and you don't have to do any testing at all, really, and you can have... That's what a specification should do. And I don't think they're going to do that, are they?
Eventually, but not by the middle of this decade. So back to the story. So I suppose the question, who's it for? Is it for operators? I think, you know, your analysis there says no, it's not for operators. So to me, it's just pure politics. I think all of this is politics. One thing I've learned during this coronavirus period, I look at UK government policy, with the exception of the vaccine, where credit where it's due, we've kicked ass on that one. We're like second only to Israel or something.
Israel apparently
UAE. UAE. Okay.
Israel's having a great time at the moment, apparently. There's no infections or anything.
I was telling you, there's more people that have been vaccinated than people who live there.
Yeah, yeah. But it's nice to know
that, coming out of their ears in Israel.
I mean, this is a tangent we can go back. But apparently they tried to introduce this passport system.
I read the same article in
it.
The Spectator.
Yeah, nobody uses it at all.
No, exactly.
Which is really encouraging, I think.
So, but leaving that aside, our policy, certainly for 2020, seemed to be dictated basically by what is everyone else doing, especially the US and Germany and France, maybe. Although initially, I think it was, what is China doing? I think a lot of lockdown was inspired by the fact that it seemed to be effective in China. Now, there's two problems with that. Firstly, you don't know what to believe coming out of China.
Yeah.
Official channels. And secondly, it's a lot easier for them to lock down because it's a more authoritarian regime in the first place. But anyway, and the reason I'm doing this isn't just to go off on a massive coronavirus. I got my little stunt out of the way at the start. is to say that I sometimes get the impression that with all this Huawei stuff, it's been similar. I mean, we know that we only really banned Huawei because the Yanks told us to. The start of 2020, by the way, I heard a podcast with Pompeo on Megyn Kelly. He came over really well. Not like some Trumpist nutcase at all. But, you know, I think he was just doing his job to the best of his abilities. Anyway, but yeah, he came around and he was hassling everyone, and Trump was hassling everyone, apparently got on the phone to Bojo and gave him a hard time. And initially Bojo was going to be like, oh, we'll let them in a bit. And then
very good.
And then Trump got on the phone, what the fuck are you doing, asshole? And he went, okay, yes, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I
think it was partly that. I think it was also the US sanctions made Huawei's position a bit
unsafe. Well, that was the stated reason,
anyway.
And I'm sure there was some justification for that. But the broader theme for me is that we were sort of following some kind of international consensus. This wasn't completely isolated, autonomous decision making.
Yeah.
And I get the impression, so that happened with Huawei, and I think that's what's happening post Huawei with, you know, the Americans have clearly decided that Open RAN is a political thing, that the politicians are all excited about Open RAN. To the extent to which they understand it, fuck knows.
Yeah.
What they do understand is that it's not Chinese and it's not Ericsson and Nokia. That's about as much as they probably understand. And I think we're just sort of going along with it. And I completely agree, this 25% thing, and we should probably move on at this point, this 25% thing is arbitrary. There's a lot more of this arbitrary shit going on. I'm going to talk about it in the third segment, but there's an American politician called Hawley, a Republican, who's just come up with an arbitrary threshold of company size after which they're not allowed to do any M&A.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, like $100 billion market cap or something like that. And market cap can fluctuate like mad anyway.
So if you're a tech company, you've got no chance these days.
Well, yeah. So yes, I agree. They should just leave them to it and let's see how it goes on.
Let's sell some stock so we go down. Then we can.
I mean, everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's worth $100 billion these days, aren't they? You know, don't even get out of bed for companies that aren't worth $100 billion.
$100 billion. It's the new 100. Okay. So talking about Huawei, as we are inclined to do, they're kind of in the shtuck. I mean, there's some more peripheral stories before we get into the core stories that I covered this week. Their Counterpoint, which is set up by a couple of former strategy analytics colleagues of mine, published some data that said that they're falling to distant third even in the Chinese smartphone market. So you got Oppo and Vivo, who are both annoying with capitalization. So Oppo's all capitals, Vivo's no capitals, including at the start. Both of those
really
annoy me.
And why have they got
really
names that sound like they come from Portugal or something?
Yeah, well, there's that as well. I mean, you know, presumably their proper names are some
Vivo
crazy
is like
Chinese character.
A big music thing, Vivo.
Yeah, well, it's also a Chinese smartphone manufacturer and is currently the number one in that market.
Yeah, South American operator.
Oh, as well.
I think, no?
Yeah, well, yes, I think so.
Oh, with an I. I was talking with two E's.
There we go.
Right, okay.
V-I-V-O.
But yes, I mean, you know, they'll have some really cool, intricate sort of Chinese character.
Yeah.
And so that'll be the westernization of their names. Huawei was like about 46% of the Chinese market, even as recently as Q4 as last year. Now it's down to about 15 and it's continuing to decline. So, and that's about the only place that it thought it had a hope in hell of selling smartphones. So its smartphone business is proper fucked.
And that's a few billions.
Yeah, that's a few billions right there. And as we're going to come to in the main bit, its networks might be struggling.
You know what I'm
bit.
Interested in is whether there's any chance of Huawei getting its Harmony OS system used by other Chinese companies.
No, I'd say there isn't. As long as they can still use Android, they won't use that. And it looks like Harmony's not even...
Because if their own phone business is going down the Swanee and they can't do that,
yeah.
the chances for Harmony aren't looking particularly good. Either,
no, I'd say the chances for Harmony are very slim. I mean, it could get good enough to be functional. It's an Android fork, let's not forget. It's not completely its own thing from the ground up.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's an Android fork. Plenty of people have tried Android forks, and Amazon tried Android forks.
Right.
They generally don't work, not because the software is intrinsically inferior, but because Google, you know...
Yeah, what you want is the special stuff, not the skeleton.
Yeah, what you want is the Google-ness.
Yeah.
You want the Play Store.
Yeah.
It's the only other curated app store apart from Apple's one.
Google Maps.
Yeah, yeah, you want Google Maps, Gmail. You want Gmail, you want all the other Google goodness.
What's funny is that... So, to go back to Huawei.
It's good to have you back here and chipping in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't even being sarky.
He's very quiet on the Zoom stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully I make an interesting point. I just saw recently that Huawei is pushing with like a brand new camera module in partnership with Leica again.
Right.
Actually, speaking of companies that are quite sad about this, probably Leica.
Yeah, yeah.
They landed an enormous contract with Huawei to build their smartphone cameras.
Yes.
And now this.
They would be, yeah, like they would be a loser. Yeah.
Carl's ice is cracking up.
But apparently, like, they're a brand new module. I'm like, oh, so they're still trying, I guess, you know, some teams inside where we were like, no, we'll carry on. But as you're saying...
Well, they're going to keep carrying on. And so we'll get to the main thing. So they're in all sorts of bother. I'll hand it over to you, Ian. So basically, they had a analyst day.
Yeah.
And again, I think you bothered to listen to it live. I sort of flicked through the YouTube vid on catch-up and checked out the press release. So why don't you give us from the top, what was the analyst day about and what should we take from it?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of, it was kind of what they're doing over the next few years in response to all the crap that's going on, in a nutshell. And my main takeaway from it was that, I mean, they didn't say this as bluntly as this, but basically, you know, they can't get access to the chips they need anymore, yeah? For telecom and for the hardware businesses that they've been in for so long and that they've done so well out of. So what they're going to do now is they're going to focus on other things, essentially. And that includes things like, I mean, there's a big push on software because obviously that's less susceptible to a US attack, I guess. You know?
What sort of software?
Well, they're a bit vague about what sort of software. I mean, Harmony OS was a part of this. In fact, they spent a bit of time talking about Harmony OS and how many developers they have in China and outside China.
They won't appreciate me being so dismissive about it.
But I think, you know, what they're saying is that, I mean, enterprise is really big in this. And that's the area of their business that actually did quite well last year. I think they grew quite a lot. So
20% wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, what they were saying was that basically businesses that are less dependent on... cutting-edge chip technology, which they can't get anymore, where they can work and get access to those chips still and develop software and come in and provide a solution, you know, the kind of stuff that you might sell to enterprise customers in some cases. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of network components that don't need this.
Yeah, I was just sorry to butt in, but I thought that's one thing I detected from that. The inference was something that you've been really strong on, and I haven't seen anyone else in our space cover at all, is the semiconductor implications to them on the network side.
Yeah.
And I thought they didn't say it explicitly, but reading between the lines, I got the impression they were going, yeah, the semiconductor shit's hitting our networks as well.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of discussion about this. You have to stay on till the end of it before they really kind of address this. And
The Marvel bonus at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
After the credits.
Yeah, after the credits. Because someone, I don't know who it was, but someone asked a question and then they went, Eric Hsu, I think it was, he was doing the whole sort of shebang really, but he sort of went off on one about, you know, chips. And I mean, they still seem to have this hope that alternatives will emerge to TSMC's, the big one, clearly.
Yeah.
Within a time frame that means they can carry on running down stock that they've got. And they're going to be okay. And these other companies.
I think they've run it down.
Well, a lot of analysts think they've run it down, and you
that
know,
smartphone thing.
Yeah,
they fell off a cliff between Q4 last year and Q1 this year. They fell off a cliff in terms of Chinese market share. That to me implies that there's a supply problem, not just a demand.
Well, I spent a long time wondering whether because the smartphone thing's been a bit more obvious in shipments in companies like Counterpoint and some of your colleagues are measurable. Yeah. I spent a lot of time wondering whether the network side of it was less susceptible to what the US have been doing. You know, this kind of cutting them off from TSMC thing, and the reason they've been cut off from TSMC, just for people who aren't aware, is that TSMC is Taiwanese, but it uses equipment and sort of design tools that come from American companies like Applied Materials. And then I think even the sort of, what they call it, electronic design automation software as well that's used is sort of from US companies as well.
Like
So they can't use TSMC. And the reason that it's bad for smartphones is that TSMC, if you want to get access to the cutting edge processes, the stuff that's made with what it is 7 nanometer and 5 nanometer technology. Well, 7 nanometer, the only two options at the moment, as I understand it from loads of analysts, and in fact Ericsson more or less confirmed it this week as well without kind of naming companies, but it's only really Samsung and TSMC that are the options at the moment. Even Global Foundries doesn't have this. And on 5 nanometer it's only TSMC actually. Even Samsung's not quite at that level. And then you go up to 10 nanometer and you've got a slightly
Intel. And you can bring some more in.
Yeah,
it was only a few years ago that we were much higher manufacturing.
So I was thinking for a long time, I mean, this stuff's recognised that you need these processes in smartphones for them to be competitive at the top end of the market.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, well, in terms of 5G equipment, is maybe that less, you know, dependent on this stuff?
Well, I've always found it funny. I don't disagree with your point about networking equipment, but I've always found it funny, given that my understanding of why smaller manufacturing processes are good for phones is because you can fit more processing power into a particular very constrained environment.
Yeah.
I just always got the impression that networking gear wasn't such a sort of physically constrained environment. So why do you need
it's just as constrained.
Right.
So you need to get
basebands.
Yeah.
And stuff.
So I spoke to a guy called Michael Begley this week, who's at Ericsson, and he's their head of RAN compute, basically, to try and get on top of this. And I've spoken to other people as well, analysts who say, yeah, the 5G network stuff needs the deep submicron as well. But I've not heard it from a vendor. And he said basically, for 5G equipment, anything that's done in baseband, which is the kind of, you know, the number, you're crunching like massive
sort of
amounts
crunching
of data.
Crunching the signal at the other end from
crunching
the phone,
signal,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And decoding it and all that.
You would be on the latest node technology.
To so be the most competitive.
So their stuff's not on, it's not on 5, but it's on, a lot of it's on 7 and it's on 10.
Fair enough.
And then the digital front end, which is a part of the radio unit itself, where you're also actually putting some baseband functions with things like massive MIMO into the radio unit. You've actually got to push that into the radio unit. So a lot of the processing, the digital processing, goes on inside the unit.
That's true, because one of the things that all these kit vendors are saying is that we've got increasingly small, compact. Yeah. Energy efficient,
exactly.
And that's all about.
So
the silicon.
You need that to be really competitive as well. So even for the digital front end stuff that's in the radio unit, it needs to be on
no
the latest
escaping.
Process technology. So you can't get away from it. I said to him, so what happens if you weren't able to use 7 nanometer stuff? And he said, well, basically you end up with a performance issue.
Right.
Not an
it's
issue.
It's just not competitive.
It's just not as competitive anymore.
Then you're a second tier player.
And then
you've got
to
be cheap as chips.
Yeah, I mean, Ericsson was very keen to be distanced from any kind of comments about competitors.
Yeah.
So I didn't ask him this in the context of what Huawei's been saying this week. But I did ask him because one of the things Huawei said was one of the reasons they want to invest more in software and push more heavily on software is they sort of feel that they can compensate for
optimize.
Not having access. Yeah, if they can optimize things more, then maybe they don't. The suggestion was maybe they don't need access
I
to
see.
The. So if you can't get to TSMC, companies like SMIC, as far as I'm aware at the moment, are on 14 nanometer, and then maybe that's good enough. But I said to Michael from Ericsson, you know, can you use software to sort of compensate for going down the, you know, the nodes and not having something as advanced? And he was like, there's still going to be a trade-off. Because you're basically having to use a less sophisticated algorithm, you know, if you don't have
And how could your software be so much better than your competitors that it compensates for
a
couple of...
Yeah. So whatever Huawei says about, you know, using software to compensate and, you know, hoping that alternatives will emerge before they run out of inventory, nobody really believes them. Yeah. It's just not a convincing story. They're going to have a really bad 2021, I think, a really tough 2021, because they've got these issues that have already shown up on the smartphone side, and they're going to have more problems on the network side this year. I mean, we don't know I'm curious as to know what's going to happen in China, even with the rollout there, you know, because there's still a lot of base stations this year that are scheduled to be deployed. And now maybe because they've got most of the massive MIMO stuff done last year, it's not so much of an issue and they can make do with, you know, less capable components. But
maybe a lot of that kit. I mean, well, there is another consideration there, by the way. And maybe this is interlinked as well. I mean, it's also interlinked. So it could be that a lot of that kit is already in a warehouse ready to go.
Yeah,
but
it could
on
be.
The flip side, there were some stories recently, wasn't there, about all three of the big Chinese MNOs trying to sort of collaborate more and network share a bit more and lower their costs.
Well, there's
and
two,
there's great efficiencies and all that.
There's two build outs happening. There's China Broadcast and China Broadcast and China Mobile are doing one of them, and China Unicom and China Telecom are doing the other. So it's two kind of infrastructure projects. But as I understand it, this year, because they spent last year investing in these 700,000 base stations for urban areas, those are the ones that mainly use the massive MIMO gear. The stuff that's happening this year is more about rural communities and, you know, less capable network equipment. So maybe they can fall back on lower quality components. But the thing that
but
I
it could
find
be
weird
that
is
also they're looking to that this knock-on effect, because we don't talk about ZTE, but presumably ZTE is struggling to get hold of this kit as well.
Well, ZTE is not on the entity list anymore, so ZTE can buy from TSMC.
I know, but can they?
Yeah.
Oh. I always assumed those things were just like broad brush
ZTE came off the entity
policies.
List because it paid the fines.
Yeah.
And then it was up and running again.
So that just says how incoherent the American policy is.
Well,
so they're
yes.
saying that maybe Huawei...
It's a good story that's not been written yet.
I know.
But it is.
Maybe Huawei's feeding all this info to the Chinese military, but ZTE isn't. Even though ZTE, I think, has got much more official ties
to
the Chinese state. I know. All people ZTE listen to this going, Scott, shut the fuck up.
Well, one thing to look at is whether ZTE's role in China starts to get even bigger. I mean, I think there's quite an even split, actually, in China between ZTE and Huawei.
I bet you they still struggle to get hold of certain kit. Anyway. I just think it could be...
Well, they can buy from TSMC.
Yeah, apparently so. But I wonder if they can. I mean, I know officially, to the best of our knowledge, they can, but I wonder if in practice
it's
they
funny,
can.
It's funny, and in the meantime, the Chinese military is circling Taiwan, pissing them off.
I know.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? It's
They just banned a bunch of Chinese supercomputing companies.
Yeah.
On the grounds that they might help out the Chinese military. Now... Again, that's sort of consistent with what they've been doing since Trump kicked all this stuff off. But are you saying there's no US companies, the supercomputing companies that help out the US military? Mm. So the wording of that thing was basically Chinese military bad and implied US military good. So it just becomes a straight judgment call. And they have to dress it up. But, you know, this is Cold Warfare by trade rather than by nuclear arms race.
You know, sorry, to go back a few steps, I just wanted to know, do we know who picked up the market share from Huawei in the smartphone business? You said it was down to 15. Who?
Well, in China, it was Oppo and Vivo.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Not Samsung, not Apple, according to Counterpoint. I mean, they only use three data points. I don't remember them talking about Samsung and Apple that much. They'd be the other two big players, and obviously Xiaomi and countless other number one Shenzhen smartphone manufacturer.
I was just wondering if there was one major winner.
No, Oppo and Vivo. Mm. Oppo and Vivo are the two main winners. And then internationally, I mean, it'll just be the whole Android ecosystem. So, I mean, LG, as we know, just crashed out, so that's thinning out. Mm. Samsung's a dominant player in Android in most of the world.
So, yeah, Samsung or maybe Google itself, yeah.
Yeah, although, funnily enough, I mean, here I've got a Pixel. My old Pixel's been handed down to Scott Jr. Mm. I like Pixels just because they're clean and then you don't have the third-party sort of bloatware on there. But I don't think they have massive market share. I mean, I'm a bit behind.
No.
So you've got, I think, I mean, Sony's still around, bless them.
Yeah.
And I think Oppo's doing really well. I just did a little straw poll by going on to EE and Vodafone and O2 and all that. And Three. Don't forget Three.
Aren't they like half price compared to Samsung and Apple?
Not necessarily. I mean, no. They've got the full range. If you're Oppo or whoever, and you produce something that's got the latest Qualcomm Snapdragon in it, and the latest screen and camera and all that, you're going to charge it. You're not going to sell yourself short. So yeah, I'd say Oppo's doing pretty well. I was surprised to see how much Oppo there was on like EE and Vodafone and that sort of thing. But Samsung's still the daddy in Android, and obviously Apple's got its own thing going on that's going just fine.
Just on the Huawei strategic pivot, because we've gone off on a tangent a bit. But I mean, one of the things they're saying is they're talking up a lot is cars actually at the moment, automotive.
Yes.
It's a massive sort of not to actually make their own cars, but to partner with Chinese companies like...
I think they're making their own cars.
No, they're not. They deny they're making their own cars completely this week.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't understand why they would make their own cars. It wouldn't suit them at all, their business model. So what
they'd be better off being a software component.
They're better off. So they've got an agreement with Beijing Automotive. They've got another one with Guangzhou Automobile, I think it's called. And they basically... This is the push on software, that they develop the software for things like autonomous driving and, you know, a lot of the systems that you have
in the
car. And the
connectivity.
Yeah, and it was really interesting hearing them talk down 5G, actually, and 6G in the context of, you know, you'd never have heard this, I don't think, 3 or 4 years ago from Huawei, for Eric Hsu to be saying, we don't think 5G is necessarily that important in autonomous driving.
Right.
At a time when...
What is then?
Well, this is exactly what you were saying. Autonomous driving, how dependent it will be on 5G is very much up for debate. And it's only the people who think that your autonomous car has to be linked to all the kind of road furniture around it.
Right.
And it's not practical anyway, because it means mobile operators have to have high capacity 5G networks everywhere, you know, even in remote areas for it to possibly work. So he was really talking down 5G.
Which was kind of
curious. A company that, and it's interesting, isn't it, now all of a sudden their 5G business is looking under threat and they're trying to move away from it and be more of a software company and an IT company, that they're saying actually maybe 5G is not such a big thing.
I bet he drives a Tesla and he sees the Tesla drive by itself amazingly with just cameras and he's like, maybe we don't need it,
I mean, back to what you were just saying, Ian, I think, you know, to sort of conclude this segment, I put myself in Huawei's position, and they're being expedient, they're being pragmatic, they're going, here's where we are, here's how we're going to try and make the best of it. And I sort of think, fair enough. I've got no real criticism. I thought the cunning plan wasn't that cunning, but
It's quite sweeping. It's quite sort of dramatic.
Yeah.
And reading between the lines,
they're basically saying everything that's made us an absolute ton of cash.
Yeah.
We're gonna diminish.
Here's the thing: any other company in any other country in the world, if they said we're going to go from telecom to being a big IT player, which is kind of what they said in a way. I mean, talked to the cloud a lot as well. You go, there's no way they're going to be able to pull this off. But with Huawei, with its R&D budget, the Chinese government behind it, a market of 1.4 billion people, Western companies aren't going to get a look in that market. You know, the Hewlett-Packards and the IBMs, forget about it. They might just about do it. The trouble is, I don't know if they can do it quickly enough, because their networks business is going to go like this.
You talk about IBM. There's a classic example of someone who pivoted from being a supplier of PCs and mainframes to basically being a sort of software and services company. But that took decades.
Yes, yeah.
Well, we've seen how Huawei came out of nowhere.
So. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's impossible for them to do, knowing what they've done in the past, but
it's going to take a little
while. It's going to be hard.
Well, and I think, so the final thing I take away from that is, while it was not explicitly said, they're sort of saying our network business is in a bit of trouble. We know their smartphone business is in trouble.
Yeah.
But we didn't necessarily know their networking business was in trouble. For them to say we're going all in on software services and enterprise is sort of them going, we're going to have to try and pivot away from networking.
The other curious thing about, maybe just to finish it off, but the other curious thing about the network business being in trouble, which I've sort of long suspected but not really known until talking to people about this, you know, nanometer issue, is the companies in Europe that are still using Huawei, and there's quite a lot that haven't gone away from it, including big German players like Deutsche Telekom, Telefonica in Germany, not so big, but KPN in the Netherlands is dependent on Huawei. What are they thinking? You know, what are their CTOs thinking? Because Ian Levy of the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre raised this as an issue last year. This is one of the reasons for them to, you know, ban Huawei and ZTE, that it would just be kind of untenable in future because it couldn't get access to components. And, you know, that in itself would be a security risk. But Deutsche Telekom's gone all in with Huawei on its 5G rollout. I mean, it's got Ericsson there as well, but I think Huawei's responsible for 2/3 of the network, and they've gone at pace basically to roll that out. And you're sort of thinking, well, if there is a supply crunch in the future and you can't upgrade equipment and you can't swap things out,
so why
take
the risk?
What do you do? It's such a risky thing to do. Yeah. I'm really curious.
And there's no risk.
Know.
There's no risk.
I mean,
buying.
If anyone from Deutsche Telekom's watching, because I'm sure I've asked them this and not got answers on it, then let us know. But it's, I don't know what they're thinking. It sounds like very, very risky move to me.
Timothée. Why is he named after shampoo from the 80s? Okay. It's only a joke, by the way, and not in any way xenophobic. Okay. Besides, I hassle Pierre all the time about French stuff, so... People know my heart's in the right place. Okay, so getting back to sort of regulation, M&A, that sort of thing, we finally had the merger between Virgin Media UK, owned by Liberty Global, American company, and O2, owned by Telefonica, Spanish company, and so.
Approved,
yeah, yeah, but by the CMA, the Competition and Markets Authority. Now, when I say approved, the timeline is there's still a month for anyone to sort of write into them and go, hold on a minute.
It's like the sort of wedding thing, isn't it?
I was about to say.
Does anybody have any objections?
Yeah, exactly.
I was about to say that.
Yes, I'm married to O2 UK.
I was about to say that. forever remain. Yeah,
or forever shut the fuck up, basically. And they might, but it looks like it's 99% there. I mean, someone would have to come up with a real graduate type of banging on the glass type of situation for this to get scuppered now. And, you know, my take on it was good. I'm pleased. You know, Virgin is a fixed line and content player. O2 is a mobile player. They're not diminishing competition in either sector. They already approved. My basic line was always, if you can approve BT buying EE, then what's the fucking problem?
Yeah.
And so now we've got another sort of converged player to take on BT and EE. And then Vodafone and Three have just got to think about how, you know, how they're going to propose it, either through partnership or through M&A. So I'm pleased they've approved it. The concern was only about wholesale mobile. They actually didn't really give a toss about the Virgin side of it. Their concern was about O2 as a wholesale MVNO supplier.
Yeah.
And they do supply a lot of big MVNOs, GIFGAF, Tesco, Leica, Sky, I think. So they're possibly the biggest MVNO wholesaler in the UK. Because GIFGAF must be one of the biggest MVNOs.
Well, GIFGAF's owned by O2.
Oh, of course it is, yeah. Right.
But yeah, they are.
Thank you
anyway,
for schooling me.
They are.
Live. but yes, they are probably one of the biggest MVNOs.
It's not that obvious.
No, but, I know. I'm totally joking. Yeah. So yes, well, then that just adds to the legitimate concern. If they own one of the biggest MVNOs, are they going to try and favour GIFGAF over the likes of Tesco and Sky? And they sort of went, nah, they're not. But it took them 5 months. And you know, the bugbear I've got, I always get really annoyed at just bureaucracy. Bureaucracy annoys me. And it's the pace of it. You have to have bureaucracy. I'm the first to say, as I have countless times, you have to have, you know, as we'll come to in a bit, you know, you have to have anti-monopoly bureaucracy, otherwise monopolies will happen.
Yeah.
Funny that, isn't it? you know, Scott and Ian being the star suppliers, sooner or later we're going to merge and have a monopoly because we'll do the maths.
Go live in the Seychelles. And...
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, people will form monopolies if they can. So you have to, there has to be scrutiny of M&A. But yes, it doesn't make much sense. You know, the combined Virgin Media and O2, whatever it's going to be called, it's still making money out of all these MVNO contracts. GIFGAF is established. Yeah, it could possibly put its thumb on the scales such that GIFGAF was able to offer shit a bit cheaper than Tesco and Sky. But I wonder, apart from people who go to like compare the market and stuff, I wonder how much difference that would make. Anyway, so, but the thing that annoyed me is that took 5 months, but even that was quicker than it would have been. I don't know if you remember, this was originally going to be a European Union thing.
Yeah.
And then there was this big, it wasn't even necessarily a given that the European would hand over, the EU would hand over jurisdiction to this thing to the UK after full Brexit, which happened at the start of this year.
God knows what it would have to do with them after Brexit anyway.
Yeah, it's none of their fucking business anymore. But, you know, this is like, oh, but I like sort of keeping an eye on things. Anyway, they did, so good for them. And our CMA was like, yeah, that's good. Now we can crack on with it. But it still took them 5 months to go, are they going to rip off Tesco Mobile? No. That took them 5 months.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's the thing I find funny is because when you look in the press release as well, it's like, the reason no, and I think it said unlikely was the word. So they couldn't even reach a conclusion anyway. Yeah. But the reason it was unlikely is because backhaul costs, I think, was one of the things. It's such a tiny bit of
it's
the
not
overall
a big
bill.
Thing. Yeah.
Well, how long does it take someone to work that out? You could have gone and asked an analyst that on day one and said, how much is backhaul costs of the overall sort of money that a customer spends in ARPU? Break it down for me. Oh, it's insignificant. Oh, great, thanks. Yeah. There's a decision for you. You know, and then, this
could
is the
you, could you take
thing.
5 months for this? Because I'm quite enjoying my massive
and
lunches.
And the point you just made about EE and BT, they've already gone through this process, the UK. Mm. You know, it's like a carbon copy of what's happening here, except it was a more worrying
except it's
merger,
smaller players.
Because these are smaller ones. So why couldn't they have just said, well, look, BT and EE was okay. So what's the, you know, there's no rationale for not allowing these companies to come together anyway. So they could have sped it up. But
yeah.
But they chose not to.
So what I want to ask you, having had my moan about the glacial pace of bureaucracy, whether it's European, just to show that I'm not just having a pop at Europe the whole time. I think our bureaucrats could definitely raise their game. Is, you know, what do you think the consequences of it are? Do you think it's going to shake up the UK market? What do you think it's going to take for the combined Virgin and O2 to be properly scaring sort of BTEE? And so on.
I'm not sure that they're going to properly scare BTEE. I'm not convinced that it's a merger that's going to be hugely successful.
Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be massively loaded with debt for a start, this combined player. And I think that will constrain what it's able to do. I mean, there are some things that count in O2's favour. It's got a good reputation for customer service. It's not using any Huawei in its network, never has, so it doesn't have some of those swap-out problems.
Everyone likes a bit of Sean Bean.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it's... but then on the other hand, Virgin Media is almost the opposite. It's been, you know, it's shit basically as far as customer service goes.
Stars my dad
for years.
He'll confirm
you
that.
Know, it's had a dreadful reputation, and you know, bringing two companies like that together can often be a real nightmare. You know, what do you do about branding? You know, even BTEE caused branding issues for a long, long time. I was getting, I'm a customer of both, and I was getting phoned up by different bits and asked about things that I shouldn't have been
and
asked
And let's be honest,
about.
The EE brand is a lot cooler and sleeker than the BT brand.
Yeah, and yet, actually...
I mean, arbitrarily,
most
I don't even know why.
To it
is
BT
just is.
Now, don't they? And almost.
I don't know if it's just like, a colour scheme or whatever.
Yeah, but I you know, they've got the branding issue. They've got... I mean, integration's never easy anyway when you bring networks together. All right, they're different networks, but, you know, and you look at Virgin, it's had all sorts of issues with this Project Lightning thing that it's been trying to do. It's way behind schedule.
It's kept quiet for a while.
Yeah, it's very much behind schedule. You've got a BT that's rolling out very, very quickly at the moment and actually doing a pretty good job. You know, I'm quite critical of BT in write-ups that I do because I think in a lot of ways they have financial problems and they've not really dealt with a lot of things. But on the fibre rollout, credit to them, You've got other companies like CityFibre in the market that's a competitive operator now. Hyperoptics even started advertising on London buses, for God's sake. I just think it's...
Does it?
Yeah. You know, and I the market for bundled... I'm still not convinced by this market for bundled offerings anyway, to be honest with you. I don't, you know, I'm... It seems to have taken off in certain bits of Europe, but is it something that UK customers have embraced? I mean, I remember talking to analysts who cover this stuff even a year ago, I think, before we went into lockdown, and they were saying it's not happened as quickly here. And there are still reasons why people might want to buy, you know, a mobile phone service separately from a fixed line, you know, and keep the two things distinct. And you've got to have a pretty compelling proposition anyway at the moment, I think, to do with, you know, based on something like sport or, you know, something else that's quite hard to put your finger on to really differentiate yourself. I mean, with the advance of companies like, Amazon and Netflix into the TV area, what is it that broadband operators can really provide as a kind of, you know, add-on experience, I guess? That, you know, anybody can go out and get a broadband line and run an Amazon service over it. And so it's very hard, I think, to make converged deals look that all that exciting or different from what, you know, what other people are doing or what you could get yourself just from sort of stitching a few things together. So I don't know. I'm just not convinced that it's going to be. No.
And the other thing, back to your debt point, for them to go toe to toe with BTE, they'd have to chuck a lot of money at it.
Yeah.
And I just don't think either company, I don't know, you might know this. I know Telefonica's always struggling with debt. So either parent company I'm talking about here. I don't know what Liberty Global's situation
is. It's bad.
Like. Right.
Yeah. They're very indebted. And I think
so they haven't got a lot of money to chuck around.
No, and it's not a good idea to be, it's not a good time to be heavily indebted at the moment. You know, you notice a lot of companies trying to reduce leverage at the moment is one kind of trend that's been happening in the market for a while. But there's concern in financial markets about...
Say debt, don't say leverage. You're not American.
I'm just using it in the financial sense. I'd never use it to mean use or anything.
All right, but, I'll let you off, but watch it.
But there's a lot of concern in financial markets about potential rise in interest rates, you know, over the next couple of years. You don't want that happening when you've got
massive debts. Yeah, because they've been at this low forever.
That's bad. Then if you're not very profitable and you're struggling to grow sales and you're having trouble on that sort of basic, you know, income sheet sort of level, profit and loss statement level, then it can make things really awkward for you. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying it's definitely going to fail. I wouldn't stick my neck out and say that. But I just think it's going to be quite tough for it to. I don't think just being this, you know, this converged operator, an operator that has two things, means that they're all of a sudden going to eat up loads of business that BT's been picking up.
No,
you know.
I think I'm not going to go off on the other tangents that I've written about because we're over time already. Pierre will be relieved to hear. But I will say that all I can really see it being is the sort of poor man's BTE. And actually, there's nothing wrong with that.
Good headline.
Yes, BTE.
they'd love that at Virgin Media in 2002.
Okay, well, sorry. but obviously you don't market yourself as poor man's, but you go for this, like T-Mobile US. In fact, their lad, I was just trying to look for a picture of it, their lad they're putting in charge, Lutz Schüler, he's got a bit of a John Ledger thing going on. He's got this 80s baddie haircut going on, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll be, who knows, maybe he's, but he's Virgin Media's CEO anyway, isn't he?
Exactly. So, I mean, but I'd never heard of him. So he obviously hasn't got a very high profile, but maybe they'll go rebrand yourself as a Ledger type. But I think they've got to come out and they've got to, you know, one thing T-Mobile did very well, I don't know how well in terms of results, but in terms of marketing and exposure, this Un-carrier thing has a certain resonance to it. And I think that's what they've got to do. They're not going to be able to chuck money at it. They're not going to have the fixed line network to match BT's. O2's mobile network's fine, but it's not better than anyone else's, that's for sure. So I think they've got to come in. They've got to be punchy. They've got to be undermining. They've got to be attacking BT and EE the whole time.
Yeah.
And position themselves in the same way as T-Mobile has done in the States as this sort of... You know, they're trying to rip you off, but we care about the little guy. You know, it's all bollocks. But that's the marketing. we care about a little guy. We'll be honest with you. But like, funnily enough, a bit like what BT does with its sub-brand Plusnet.
Yes.
And they got that northern bloke that goes, oh, we're just like good, honest fucking broadband. And it's like, it's broadband. It's not a loaf of bread.
Is that, that's not Sean Bean, is it?
No. Well, there we are. So they should stick with Sean Bean. They go, you got a northerner. We got Sean Bean, and he's a more famous northerner. So how do you like them?
He's Ned Stark, for Christ's
sake. Exactly.
Sake.
And he's Boromir. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah,
all that.
Yeah, right, yeah.
006.
Yeah, well, Sean Bean's a ledge. He's... he's doing Yorkshire tea ads.
He is?
Yeah.
I mean, he
stands up there sort of getting all excited about Yorkshire tea.
He's the pride of Yorkshire.
So, yes, I think that's what they do for the marketing. They position themselves as the plucky upstart.
Yeah.
And that might work. But I can't see them ever being more than that unless their parent companies find some cash. Cool. Okay, I think we've done well over an hour, haven't we, Pierre? Mm-hmm. So, oh, that was good. Isn't it great to be back?
It's much better.
Cheers, mate.
So much easier. Yeah, cheers. Hopefully it doesn't go on for a few weeks and then get cancelled again.
I know, because someone sneezes.
Yeah, we'll see.
But yeah, it was all good fun. And thanks a lot for sticking with us. And make sure you join us for the next one.